has finally happened. The name Trump at the top of a criminal indictment. And while it is not Donald J. Trump, the array of charges unsealed today in a Manhattan court strike very close to home. Exactly how close? You'll find out ahead on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. You know, we knew they were coming. Felony counts against the Trump Organization and its chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg. But the details, the fallout, the pictures, take a look. That's Weisselberg, who is walking towards a Manhattan courtroom in cuffs and a mask. Note, cuffs. This all packs a heck of a wallop. Today, the Weisselbergs and the Trump family, Weisselberg in particular, the family business of the Trumps, both pleading not guilty to multiple counts of fraud, and in Weisselberg's case, grand larceny, stemming from what the Manhattan DA's office calls a, quote, sweeping and audacious scheme to avoid paying taxes on bonuses and company perks. The direct impact on the 45th president of the United States himself, nil, nothing. In fact, he calls these charges, quote, a political witch hunt. The indirect impact, the potential future impact, unknown, but likely not nil, likely not nothing. I'm going to stop right here and bring in Harry Litman. He is an expert because he is a former U.S. attorney and he's host of the podcast Talking Feds. Okay, Harry, I want you to break down for me the significance of what we heard in that courtroom today, because when I hear these four things, defraud scheme, conspiracy, grand larceny, and falsifying tax records, I think prison is in the offings. Am I right?
Prison may be in the offings, and it's a real difference from what we were thinking might be coming as early as recently as yesterday when the Trump lawyer sort of poo-pooed the whole thing. Just as you say, the sort of package that the DA wrapped it all in their words, audacious. So what you have here is not isolated instances, but what they're calling a scheme to defraud over 15 years. And really, some of what's involved here seems pretty darn brazen. Cash bonuses when everyone's getting checks, having an apartment and not paying for it, living in that apartment in New York City, but claiming you're not a resident, all kinds of compensation and cover-ups for the compensation. So what is finally unveiled today is much more of a scheme, much more robust, much more easy to understand, and much more pointing directly at Weisselberg as someone who obviously was involved in it. So it's harder hitting. It's not the biggest thing that as they're still investigating, grand jury there till November, but it's harder hitting than it seemed even yesterday it would have been.
So, Harry, you know, when I saw 15 felony counts, and yeah, I listed what they're all about, and then I heard $1.7 million worth of avoidance on taxes, the $1.5 million rung a bell with me, because over $1 million, I think you're looking at a max of 25 years. And then I heard 15 years alleged behavior, a pattern of behavior over 15 years, which now I need you to tell me, is that each year, maybe there's a charge for each year of these offenses, and is now 25 years a reality? And then just for good measure, is that $1.7 million that hasn't been paid, or is it $1.7 million that needs to be paid in a percentage? Did you know what? There's a big difference, right?
Yes. Okay, let me try that. So the short answer is no and no in terms of 25 years and what we're looking at. But the 1.7 is more than just taxes. They fashioned it as a scheme to defraud. That includes every victim, including, very importantly, the IRS, that is a victim of the scheme, but wouldn't normally be something, a part that they could bring in to New York charges. So it's a way to encompass it all in terms of the actual amount. So many of the felony charges, 15 though there may be, are what under New York law are called E or D felonies. But the grand larceny, which you're very right to put your finger on, that's a so-called Schedule B felony, and that involves 5 to 15 years in jail. Now, under New York practice, a judge will really be responsible. I don't think a judge will give Weisselberg 5 to 15, but I think the judge will give a custodial sentence. So this 73-year-old man is looking at going into jail, which has a sobering effect as a result of the way they pleaded it, which was able to get at things that otherwise would have been beyond the statute of limitations, and also get at cheating of the IRS.
Okay, so important to note, he was asked to surrender his passport. That's the he part, you know. Alan Weisselberg is a he. He's a person. But then there was that additional piece that was Trump Organization. Can you explain in the most simple terms, how do you charge a corporation? Who's there to sort of answer for it, be it, go to jail for it? Obviously, that's not going to happen. But how do you charge a corporation? And isn't it weird to have a person and a corporation together?
Short answer is no. So how you charge it? You charge it because of the actions of people high up. If some middle person here had kind of snuck one over and no one knew, no corporate liability. But when you get this high and Weisselberg and others are acting, that is corporate liability. In the federal system, you wouldn't do it that often. In the state system, I think you do it. Who goes to jail? As you say, nobody except Weisselberg, who defends the organization, hires a lawyer, and right as of now, it looks like it's the same lawyer as for Donald Trump. And it matters, Ashley, because depending on the charges and the disposition, it could be a body blow to the organization itself, which is thinly capitalized, which is the jewel in the crown of the Trump image. So its personal impact, as you said up top, indirect but substantial on Trump himself, could be bigger than the impact of even Weisselberg's going to jail.
Okay, and on the note that you just hit, the impact on the guy at the top of the corporation, that's right, Donald Trump, I want to bring in Mark O'Mara as well, a criminal defense and civil rights attorney. And also, I want to bring in one of the keenest legal minds I know, Glenda Hatchett. She is a former chief judge of the juvenile courts in her native Atlanta and founding partner of her law firm. You probably know her from her TV series, Judge Hatchett, and The Verdict with Judge Hatchett. Okay, so first, Mark O'Mara, to you. You just heard Harry talking about that guy. You know, everybody wants to know, what's the exposure for President Trump? If he's at the head of the corporation and the corporation was in court today, where does that leave him now? And where does it leave him going forward?
Right now, he's safe because his name was not on the indictment. Weisselberg was, and Weisselberg has to do some real soul searching as to whether or not indictment. And take it on.
Sorry, we've got it. Sorry, Mark, go ahead. We have a little bit of cross audio with all of our guests, but carry on, please. I apologize.
So as of today, Mr. Trump is okay because he's not on the indictment. But as we all know, this is the first inning of now these new indictments. The grand jury is going to be in panel for the next several months. They're going to take additional information. And I'm presuming what I would do and what I have done as a prosecutor is you charge somebody close and you offer them the opportunity to cooperate. That was offered to Weisselberg beforehand. He didn't take it, it seems. So now they're going to let him know that he's under indictment and that he could go to jail, probably is going to go to prison, not only with what he's charged with today, but as this matter progresses. I'm presuming we're going to see what we call superseding indictments, meaning additional indictments with additional counts and probably additional co-defendants. And this, again, round one or inning one of what is going to be a long, long ball game before we get anywhere near a courtroom.
So I want to jump back, and Glenda, I'm going to come to you in a minute, but not before I get Harry Lipman to comment on this, and that is something that Michael Cohen said on the air just a little bit ago. He said regarding the way the business operates with Donald Trump, he doesn't use email, and therefore doesn't have to, there's no evidence trail with email. These are Michael Cohen's words, of course. He also said that he personally delivered a Michael Cohen said that Michael Cohen personally delivered a message to Alan Weisselberg for Donald Trump. And that message was this, and I'll quote Michael Cohen. He said, "We've been through much bigger things," Michael Cohen says, Trump said. "We've been through much bigger things, and I have your back." So I don't know that that makes any difference, that Michael Cohen is saying, I am the witness to tell you that Donald Trump and Alan Weisselberg are communicating. But as far as an evidence trail, Harry Litman, if they don't email, if they don't text, what else is there?
It's harder. Now, any statement Trump makes comes in, including that one to Cohen. But what Trump can be expected to allege is, what did I know? The accountant did it. That's why Weisselberg is the linchpin. That's why he's had such pressure on him to date. And that's why there are charges today. They said to him, look, cooperate or we will bring the charges. He said, OK. And so they had to follow through. But I agree. It's the first inning. The grand jury sits till November. Vance, who's there till December, will want to make the ultimate charges. On the other hand, Jennifer Weisselberg, Michael Cohen, all the paper, I think, doesn't add up to enough of a case for guilty intent on Trump's part. For that, you really do need Weisselberg. And if he stays quiet, that's going to make it hard to ever charge Trump himself.
Okay, after the break, we're going to talk squeeze play. And Glenda Hatchett, I'm going to ask you a little bit about the kids, because everyone wants to know about the kids. They were part of the Trump Organization. Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. Harry Litman, thank you. I know you're busy and you have to run. I appreciate you joining us.
Me.
Mark and Glenda, please stick around. We are digging deep into it. Again, the kids, the exposure, and what about more charges? Is that possible? That's all next. Welcome back. We are breaking down the charges brought in New York State Court today against the Trump Organization and the man who controls the money, the company finances, and very possibly its secrets as well. Joining me again are trial lawyer Mark O'Mara and lawyer/TV judge and one very smart cookie, Glenda Hatchett. Okay, Glenda, I always turn to you when I need you to explain things. And I felt like a lot of these charges, oftentimes you'll see these in civil court. You don't often see this kind of a charge, come out like this. And that's why a lot of Trump supporters are saying this is a witch hunt. This isn't fair. This is only because it's a Democratic, DA, et cetera. Is that true? Because $1.7 million to me is a lot. And I've seen a lot of people go to jail, not civil. I've seen them go to jail for, these kinds of charges.
It's a lot of money. But I will tell you that I think that, first of all, I question whether this is the right timing for this strategy. And what I mean by that is, why not wait until you're further along? The grand jury is in panel until November. Vance is retiring in December. I understand that we've got a timeline consideration. But we know a couple of things. We know that the AG, James in New York, state of New York, has been cooperating. They've been working together. James and Vance have been working together. And so it struck me that these were not that strong of charges. I mean, it's serious, but several tax experts, and I'll be the first to say I am not a tax expert, but a lot of the tax experts have really said clearly that this seemed unusual to go after perks. Having said that, I think, though, that the strategy may have well been that you go to Weisselberg and you say, listen, we tried to get you to cooperate. You haven't. And so we're going to bring these charges now before we come to other things. There have to be other things far more serious than the charges that we've seen today. Not to minimize those, but in terms of the kind of time that they've been taking, the tenacity in getting the Trump's tax returns, people being very clear about the hush money payments and so forth, that there has to be a lot more to this story that we're going to see unfold. And I agree with your panelist today that he really is this financial guy who's not only worked for Trump, but who was with Trump's father and has been with them for decades, is the linchpin. And if he decides to turn, and if he decides to turn early, that can make major problems.
Well, especially if they're able to really squeeze them. Because when I heard 25 years, I thought, oh, man, that's a squeeze. That would hurt. Okay, so Mark O'Meara, help me understand what the exposure is for Donald Trump's three kids, Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka, because they have all been a part of the Trump Organization. And when you see Trump Organization, and then you get the explanation that that involves the executives, they're all very highly placed in the Trump Organization. What is their exposure, and could we see additional charges later?
Without question, they are all exposed, and I'm certain that that's exactly what's happening, is that this is the first volley. I'm certain that prosecutors were a bit frustrated that Weisselberg would not cooperate. I know that that was what they wanted. That was their, I hate to say this, that's their Trump card, but they didn't get it. So what they did was they went after him and hit him with a few charges. I think there are more coming. I think what they let him know by this indictment was we were going after the corporation. No question about that. They almost have to under New York state law. But they're going after Weisselberg. And they're going to let him know that since you didn't cooperate friendly, now we're going to put the crosshairs on you. But I'm certain that what they're saying to Weisselberg and what the behind-the-scenes conversations are is that the next people in line are probably the Trump children, because we do know they have exposure, not only exposure from getting the benefit of the corporate funds, but also that they had decision-making in it, because we know that Donald Trump was doing everything. Nothing got done without him, at least according to Cohen. And now we have the children involved as well. And this is going to be, Ashley, as you mentioned, an ongoing squeeze play to get to the people who are going to hurt the most. And that's anybody with a Trump as the last name.
I couldn't agree more.
Go ahead, Glenda.
I mean, that is absolutely spot on. And it really is going to be a series, almost like dominoes, I think, is the strategy going forward. I just had thought that they might have had a little bit more before this play, but I do agree that this is the first volley in what I think will be a long series. And I think that there is significant exposure for the children. And that's going to play a lot closer to Trump than Washington. I mean, he might throw him under the bus, but will he throw his own children under the bus is the real question.
Well, it gets real, you know, when you are walked down a courthouse hallway in front of cameras in handcuffs. I noticed Alan Weisselberg arrived today without his tie on, and I thought, he knows. He knows that he's going to be processed. He's going to be cuffed. He's going to be led into a courtroom, and the cameras will see it. This is normally in the business what we call a perp walk. Sometimes it's very political. Sometimes it's just because these are public hallways. And this is the only place you usually get cameras into, you know, a public courthouse. But that's the kind of thing that starts to really feel real, Mark O'Meara, when you realize I'm in cuffs now. I'm, you know, getting criminally processed. And there are people with flak vests who are escorting me. And I'm sorry to sort of bring it down to that. But sometimes the gut reaction gets real fast when you're in it, not when your lawyers are discussing it with you before the fact.
No, you are, again, spot on. I have seen my white collar defendants, my white collar clients, those who have been insulated from this, their entire political or professional career. I've seen them come to tears when they all of a sudden get hit with this reality that their salary doesn't matter, their placement doesn't matter, the country club they belong to doesn't matter anymore. When they put those cuffs behind you, when they tell you, take off your belt, take off your tie, because they will not put you in a holding cell with a tie or a belt on. And you sort of caught that, Ashley. When they tell you that, all of a sudden, that back part of your brain says to you, this is real. That's a real cell over there. I can't open that door unless some marshal does or some deputy does. And yes, it gets real. And I think that's exactly what the prosecutors intended, was that he needed a wake-up call to realize that this is not going away. We have some charges, more may be coming, but it just got real for Weisselberg. And now he's going to have to deal with how to handle that reality.
Yeah, that stuff really hurts, right? Go ahead, Glenda.
Not protect him. There is no protection. Trump can't do anything to protect him in this situation. And so, Mark, I absolutely agree. I mean, this is when, you know, really it gets so real. But when you are in a place where you've been isolated and you've been doing whatever you want to do for as long as you want to do, and we have to admit, there has been a lot of arrogance and from Trump on down in this process from the very beginning. And so I don't think that they really ever maybe thought that it would get this far. But he was on notice. They tried to get him to cooperate, and he wouldn't cooperate, and now we see him in handcuffs.
Yeah, so listen, this has all been over cars, apartments, expensive tuition that the Trump Organization allegedly paid to Alan Weisselberg's family, including his, you know, his son and the son's children. And these are, you know, have been considered perks, but they are allegedly not to have been claimed on taxes. But when you're talking about $1.7 million, this isn't not, you know, paying taxes on, you know, your Ashley, little thing that you got
that they first got Al Capone on tax evasion charges.
Right. That's a very good point to make. And by the way, plenty of people have gone to prison for a lot less. Okay, guys, hold tight for a minute, if you will, because there are a lot of other big names having legal issues, not the least of which Britney Spears, another development, the judge coming down hard and doing something that mostly the public probably not be too thrilled to hear, but the public doesn't know everything. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And then Allison Mack from that insane sex cult Nexium. She just found out how long she is going to jail for. So after the break, guys, we're going to dig into those stories as well. The slow motion heartbreak in Surfside, Florida. The recovery efforts have stopped and a hurricane may be coming. We'll let you know what's happening there. I'm back with my guests, Mark O'Mara and Judge Glenda Hatchett. And we're changing topics, guys, because while Trump was big in the legal news today, so was Britney Spears. And so was Allison Mack, a former television actress from the show Smallville, but who became far more famous for her involvement in the sex cult called Nexium, a huge Netflix series on it, a big, big story. And they have been falling, you know, like dominoes in terms of sentencing. Let's start with Britney Spears, if I can. And, you know, it's not an entertainment story. Judge Glenda, it's a story that people really need to understand, because I think it's becoming almost a cause célèbre without a lot of people maybe understanding the layers beneath the headline. A judge just yesterday said no. The judge said no to Britney Spears and her request to have her dad kicked off as her financial conservator, not the rest of it. That's someone else. But what's really interesting, and as a judge, I think you get this. The judgment was dated yesterday. And while it doesn't actually have anything to do with her appeal to be free from her conservatorship, it was dated after Britney made that emotional appeal to that judge. What do you make of that?
I found that interesting. You're right. There's so many layers to this, because at first blush, you think, well, my goodness, she's a grown woman. She's performing. There was a reason that the conservatorship was put in place to begin with. I do think, though, that there needs to be someone other than her father who will come in if the court deems this necessary for her to still have this in place. So a couple of things happened. Court said no, but they said no, but they ruled without it being prejudiced. That means that this can continue. They can come back. I would hope that the court would appoint someone independent, not her father, given what she said in her passionate plea to the court. The other thing is that her attorney didn't ask so much for her father to be removed as he asked for a new co-conservator. And they asked for this premier trust company of California. Interestingly enough, now that trust has said, we're going to withdraw in support of her, and they're taking the side that she really ought to be in a different situation. So I think that this needs a deeper look. I do think that The judge has information that we as a public do not have. We have heard her passionate plea. There are even now senators, including Elizabeth Warren, U.S. Senate, and pushing for there to be a look at this whole concept of conservatorships.
So, Mark, if you could jump in on this as well. Most people just think, you know, free Britney. I mean, it's a really easy poster. But no one, I will say no one other than those exactly directly connected to this case knows what's in the file. It is heavily redacted. It is medical. So there's HIPAA. Nobody knows what the assessments, the dispassionate, disinterested parties have said to the judge about their assessment of Britney Spears. These are not people appointed by her dad. They are people appointed by the court. So I want you to just weigh in on Britney's chances of getting what she wants, which is freedom. I want to do everything. I want my body. I want my dating. I want my money. I want everything, especially when we just saw the judge say she's not capable. The actual quote, and I'll have to paraphrase it, was she's not capable of avoiding the fraudsters. She's not capable of protecting herself financially.
You know, it's interesting because even if with a wide open file, you know, when Ashley, you and I analyze cases with open discovery and we look back and go, you know what, I don't know that I agree with that judge's decision because I've looked at all the information and here's my opinion. We don't have that case here. As you said, this is a case where we almost have to default to a judge, as you say, a dispassionate judge who looked at this case and said, look, I'm acting on the best interest of the ward who is before me, Ms. Spears. I'm looking at it. I'm listening to all the evidence, none of which or most of which the pundits have any insight on. And I'm telling you, I believe that this ward, this person, Ms. Spears, needs some help, that she cannot protect herself with her $60 million or whatever it is from the fraudsters. We already have seen it happen in the past. We know that she does have some mental health concerns because even though the majority of her mental health history is, as it should be, protected, this whole argument about this use of lithium or not, lithium is quite a strong drug used only in those circumstances, usually when it's very necessary. So that gives me the insight that there are still some significant concerns here. This judge is trying to sort of balance protecting Ms. Spears sort of from herself or from those who will prey upon her. Now, I agree with the judge wholeheartedly. There is such a disconnect between Ms. Spears and her father that there is no reason to have that disconnect, to have that friction there. There are plenty of other people out there who can handle her money for her. It doesn't have to be somebody with whom there is such a conflict, such a personality dispute, that it's only going to cause Ms. Spears more concern, more right. dysfunction in the relationship. Get her to somebody who she trusts.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have one, literally I have 1 minute left and I think it's more like 45 seconds, but I need you, Glenda, to comment on Allison Mack getting 3 years for being in a leadership role of the NXIVM sex cult, sex trafficking. I mean, awful charges. The max could have been 40. The prosecutors asked for 14 to 17 and a half. Her defense asked for nothing. She got three. Do you think it's appropriate?
No, I don't think it's appropriate. I think she should have gotten more than that. And I know we have a short term, and hopefully we'll talk about this again. But I think that given all this happened, I think more should be imposed on her. I really do.
And I will say that she was extraordinarily cooperative. She handed over tapes. I mean, she did a lot to make sure that Keith Raniere, the head of the whole snake, really got the boots taken to him over 100 years in prison. But there you go. Smallville actress Allison Mack, 3 years. She's going away for that awful series of crimes. Okay, listen, both of you, thank you so much. Mark O'Meara and Judge Glenda Hatchett, I always love getting your... You just make it sound so simple, and it's never simple. So thank you both. Appreciate it.
And it's good to be on with Mark. It's been a long time since we've seen
you. It has been a while. Great to see you, Judge. Hopefully
I love it when everyone gets along. That should be America. Okay. We're going to switch gears because a lot has happened in Miami and I need you to know something. Put the families of the missing in your prayers right now because the searching has stopped. It is too dangerous. The existing buildings may collapse. And if that's not bad enough, there is a hurricane on the way. The president went down there today. We'll take you there. to get you the very latest from the Champlain condo complex in Surfside, Florida, where if you can imagine, on top of everything that they have been through, there is a hurricane that is predicted to strike South Florida. And just think of what that could possibly do to the rescue effort. Already, it has stopped the rescue effort. Everybody is off. Everything has halted. Not only because the winds are coming, but because at 2 o'clock in the morning last night, an alarm went off. And it's an alarm to indicate the structural integrity, not just of the pile that those people have been working tirelessly with their bare hands on. The pile actually shifted last night. It actually moved. And the remaining structure that's still standing, that also became a liability. Something moved in that building as well. Joining me now is Jack Joyce. He's a retired battalion chief with the FDNY, Fire Department of New York, and a board member of the Presidential Medal of Valor Committee for his work during the rescue and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center. Jack, you are the perfect person to talk to right now. I remember, and I know you remember, regularly the alarms going off on the pile at 9/11, and everyone ran for their lives. And then they came back, and they continued the work. And that's what I was reminded of when I heard about the alarm last night.
Yes, it's a shame that they had to stop at any point in time. It's very difficult for firefighters, the first responders, to stop what they're doing and to then come off the pile. And like you said, run for your life sometimes, because we don't know whether or not those other buildings, the other building is going to come down or something in the pile is going to shift.
Can I, and I know we're on a really long delay, so I'll just let our viewers know, because you're in a remote location, there's a big pause between you and me, but we'll you know, soldier through this. So one of the things that's really critical is that it's been revealed that the debris pile is actually part of the support for the existing building. And I know that during 9/11, that wasn't so off as well. Some of the debris was supporting other debris. So it is a very complicated and dangerous kind of line of work. You yourself, I understand you have gone through windows. You have fallen through floors doing this kind of work. You say regularly that rescuers and searchers like you walk off your job badly injured. So talk to me about what these guys are doing down there, given that it's been raining nonstop.
Well, everybody in the fire service and first responders are trying to do their best to recover or rescue any individuals that are still trapped under that debris. And like you pointed out, some of this structure is actually supporting the other building that's still standing. So they have to meticulously remove that material and then evaluate after certain amounts of times, or continually evaluate what is happening with the major structure that's still standing that is potentially deadly for them standing on the pile. However, those individuals will go back to work immediately as soon as the all clear sound is given to them. Right now, I actually just was told that the work has continued down at the pile right now.
So they've gone back on. I mean, it's like whiplash. And if you're a family member waiting to find out if they can, you know, find your loved one, talk to me a little bit about the images we're seeing, Jack. The buckets, again, it is so reminiscent of the bucket brigades, the red buckets at 9/11. What those workers are doing, loading up that debris into the buckets, it is not just concrete. It's not just rebar. There sometimes are pieces of people. It has got to be an overwhelmingly traumatic experience for those workers as well.
Well, you know, it took a long time for a lot of guys in New York City to come to grips, especially with the Home Depot Bucket Brigade. You know, it's very heart-wrenching to have to remove an individual from any structure or any catastrophe. Whether or not they are removing those individuals from the scene through the buckets is I'm not aware of. However, they have to meticulously go through that material so that no one is missed and everybody is accounted for. The men and women down there and those first responders that are doing this is just devastating to their, you know, physical and mental ability. And we'll see down the road, as we did in 9/11, that these individuals need to go talk to somebody. And actually, I recommend that these USAR teams and fire departments down in Miami-Dade and all the local departments that are actually working the pile mandate that these individuals have a counseling session.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing is that despite the fact that what they are finding is traumatic, and they are sifting through what they are putting in those buckets, and the results of that is often going to a homicide tent, is going to a forensic analysis before it heads off to the medical examiner for identification, DNA identification. To that end, I heard one of the experts explain it, Jack, and maybe you can help me sort through it, as though the building collapsed in four different places, that the center was the first phase, and that the second phase was the back, which collapsed on top of the center, and that the north side collapsed on top of the center, and that the remaining parts of the building collapsed on top of all of those three. So they've called it delayering. And I guess, you know, 9/11 was a perfect example of going layers and layers and layers. How long will it take to get through all the layers and hopefully find all the people?
Well, time is always of the essence, especially on the rescue end of any type of catastrophe. This is a large operation that's going to require a lot of manpower, a lot of help and support on the construction side. You're going to need some heavy equipment in there, but you also have this one thing that's hanging over the top of them, and that's the other building. Besides this hurricane that's coming in, the men and women down there on that pile, those first responders, will work through until they're ordered off that pile. They'll continue. Right now, I know they're rotating those USAR teams out, and they're bringing fresh crews in from across the country and are alerting other USAR teams to be on the alert that they will be going to work at this pile. So this is a perfect example of this, the bravery of these men and women that are going in harm's way and standing above a 13-story structure that could at any point in time collapse on top of them. So this is a textbook pancake collapse when it comes down to it, that each floor came down on top of each other.
It just scares the hell out of me to think what the danger is for those men and women on that pile. 1,400 tons of debris has been removed. Jack, stay with me for a moment. When we come back after the break, the president and Jill Biden both came down to Miami today. They marked off 3 hours on the White House schedule to meet with the families. I'm going to ask you a little bit about the significance of that, because that happened during 9/11 as well. We are back in just a moment. Back now with retired Battalion Chief Jack Joyce of the Fire Department of New York, who spent many, many days digging out from the rubble of the World Trade Center. So he knows exactly what those in Miami are going through right now. Jack, the president came down to Miami to meet with the family members and the first responders, spent the whole day. In fact, there were pictures of him with his wife, Jill Biden, walking down the I think the only way to call it is a memorial wall, much like 9/11, the pictures of the missing with flowers and, you know, tokens and teddy bears and things left. I think we've got the pictures. Let's pop those up. This is the Bidens visiting that wall today. Look, it may be ceremonial, but he did say that the federal government is now going to pick up the entire tab for the cost of what's happened, for everything that they're doing down there to search, to rescue, and then to, of course, recover. It is not lost on workers who are exhausted, who have been working for 8 days straight, who are traumatized by things they've found, when the president of the United States arrives, as happened during 9/11, right, Jack?
Exactly. He actually spoke very well you know, a little bit of emotional speech that he was having. I mean, 3 hours with the families means all the world to them, as you probably interviewed some of those families. He also pointed out the dedicated and hard work of the first responders and all their hard work that's been going on constantly for the last week. One thing in particular that I specifically was very happy to hear, that right at this point in time, we're all Americans, just like back in 9/11. Nobody was a Republican. Nobody was a Democrat. We're just people, Americans doing their job, especially on a catastrophic event as this, just like in 9/11. President Bush came down, gave that little extra jolt of energy and a little push for those first responders to get the job done, and also to comfort those individuals that are going to need a lot of help
yep.
on the road.
Politics, you know, politics aside, Governor Ron DeSantis was seated right beside, President Joe Biden. We're a little short on time, but I do want you to talk to me about the upcoming storms. I know that draping the buildings, netting the buildings will often help to stop, you know, wind from bringing debris down on the workers. But with a hurricane, I mean, you don't rely on a net for a hurricane. What are the chances realistically that the hurricane could seriously compromise that standing structure?
Well, right now you have a big wind sail up there right now with all those different apartments open. So the wind will actually be a great influence on that building standing. Like you mentioned before, and I'm sure the engineers are down there trying to figure out how to shore up that building without jeopardizing the operation moving forward. They don't want to stop right now. They want to keep moving and trying to get any voids or any hope that anybody's left then in those voids still alive to get them out. They'll be pushing hard now, especially as the hurricane approaches. The job right now is to maintain the safety of those first responders on the pile, and don't make that be a factor. You have a risk reward. The risk is always there. The reward is what you're risking, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and what your risk of the lives of those first responders. So they're going to have to go into that building that's still standing and try to brace it, try to shore it up, especially depending on the size of this hurricane. That's a lot of wind. Yeah. The netting will help tremendously, only because that's going to stop flying debris from coming off the building at any point in time, not just during a hurricane, any wind, right. any small. So I'm sure they're working hard on that.
Jack Joyce, thank you so much for your expertise and also for your heroism during 9/11 personally, and for our viewers. Thank you for all of the work that you've done. A couple of notes that I'd like to add for our viewers now. One of the things that the workers have been told is that lightning will be the only thing that will take them off the pile other than the instability of the structure. This is a gather-as-you-go operation, and this is also an evidentiary gathering as well. 1,400 tons of debris, but no word yet as to whether this will change from a rescue to a recovery. That will be very difficult for the family. Families, I should say. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we are sending our thoughts, our prayers to those in Surfside.